Now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
WGN 435. Royalty with me today, Brent Sopel, Jared Payton. Now joined by number 19. Look at you, Troy Murray. Just always Troy. So dapper. Just
look at you.
Your wife must dress you.
This is all about radio right here.
I mean, you really, you know how to do it over here. So we've had a bunch of conversations today, Troy. Do you want to start with your thoughts on Scott Darling, Corey Crawford, how well, who would you play, what's the future look like to you as far as what the Hawks will do in net?
What's going to happen in the summer, nobody knows. I mean, it's going to be real interesting, and it's a great situation for Scott Darling. He's worked extremely hard. He's turned his life around. When you hit rock bottom, you have to make some decisions. He made some real tough decisions about where he needed to be and where he wanted to go, and you give him full marks for that. To put himself in this position, he's going to be, you know, in a spot where he's going to get some big money, one way or the other, whether it's here, whether it's somewhere else. They have to make a decision. If Scott Darling, it can be that number one guy on a different team. You know, the Blackhawks are certainly going to look at all options that they have to see if they can't bring him back. But obviously, when you have Corey Crawford, and the one thing about the relationship between Corey and Scott, they understand that Corey is the number one guy, and he's going to get that opportunity. And Scott Darling understands where he sits in the pecking order. He's been fantastic the last couple seasons, earned this opportunity to be in a position where in the summer when he's an unrestricted free agent to cash in on it. And that's just the way the game works, and it's the financial side of the game that the Blackhawks have understood here last little while with the salary cap situation. You know, I go back to Corey Crawford tonight. I know that Joel Quenneville was put on the spot a little bit, but you got to give your number one guy that opportunity, get back in there. And Corey hasn't been bad. I mean, not as good as he was at before the appendectomy that they had in Philadelphia, but he's kind of admitted. I said, I got to work on a few things, but he's the number one guy. Scott Darling knows where he is, and both goaltenders have the faith of the guys inside the locker room, which is really important. There's some really interesting situations going around the league right now in St. Louis. You know, they sat out their number one guy. I don't know if you were talking about a little bit earlier. They sat out their number one guy to reset. I've never heard that before. They don't have that issue here. They love both of these guys, and the one thing that they've had this season basically is the consistency of the guys in the net that give them an opportunity basically every single night to get points out of a game.
Troy, go ahead. You want me to go?
I want you to go.
Well, why don't you go?
It's your stage.
No, because it just, you start to think about it, and I was talking to Brent about it earlier. It was that this team is, Blackhawks have been in every game that they played so far this season, and luckily to the goaltending, that's been huge for them. But we also talked about the salary cap, and every single night, this is a different day and age for Joel Quenneville. For these young guys, we talked about the youth movement coming into this season. This youth movement now is going to be critical, and these guys getting the big minutes now for what they do once the postseason comes.
One of the things that they kind of went through as an organization this summer is they had to make some decisions. Do we bring in some veteran players who are going to play for a lower salary because they want to stick around the NHL? You could have brought in a number of those players to help out this team. But next year, you're going to look for those same type of players. Next year, you're going to look for those same type of players. They've gone through that transition with the guys surrounding the core group. The players that they have within their organization that they've signed out of college, that they've drafted, give these kids the opportunity to see if they can play in the NHL. And that kind of was the mindset. We're gonna let these guys make mistakes. We're going to see how they progress. We'll make decisions as we move along of where these guys are at and where we see them fitting in this year, next year, 4 years down the road. And that's why you're seeing all these young guys getting important minutes. And Hinnestroza is a great example. Hartman, these guys are earning spots at the NHL level, and they're getting to the point where they're saying, like, these guys are legitimate NHL players, and we're going to have these guys around as a big part of this team for a lot of years to support the core group of guys, because you have to financially fit in some of these younger players one way or the other, or you go the other route, which is bring up these, or pick up these older players that have 1 year left and they're looking for a team, looking for another opportunity to hang around the NHL for good money for 1 year, but fitting under the salary cap structure. These young guys have done an excellent job this season, and it's for the first time in a long time, I think that Joel, in his mind, And so if she would know it, he's got to, you know, kind of reset his mind and work with these younger players because, you know, in a lot of ways you don't want those growing pains, but you have to have them. And moving forward, this team is going to be better for it by putting these kids in an opportunity. And they've played in a lot of tight games. I mean, the one-goal games that the Hawks have played this season, you look at their goals for and against differential, kind of indicates that they've got the most one-goal games in the National Hockey League to have the most points that they have or getting the most points out of these close games.
30 of 48 games this season have been one-goal games for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, it really is. I think it's 18 wins that they have?
Yes, 18, 7, and 5.
Yeah, I mean, that's unreal. I mean, their numbers in one-goal games over the last several years have been tremendous. It's because you have the core group of guys inside the locker room. Give these guys an opportunity in the third period to make the difference. Kane, Hossa's been money in the third period. 10 goals past the second period. 5 game-winning goals he gets the other night in Boston. When you have those core group of guys, and sometimes you look at maybe a little bit of the inconsistency that they've had this season, you put that on the back burner and say, our goaltenders have been great. It's not the recipe for success long-term. But give our star guys, give our core group of guys that opportunity in the third period to make the difference, and they've been able to do that.
I think it, you know, that allowed Joel to kind of relax a little bit. When you got a core group of guys, you know, they get to watch what these guys do on and off the ice. And these kids, if they're smart, you know, you keep your mouth shut and you just watch and watch and listen and what these guys have to say and do. But I want to talk about a quick question about Darling. Obviously, you get to watch him. Do you see anything different from last year that he's elevated his game, you know, different style, or, you know, actually, you know, a wafer on the plane, is he carrying himself a little bit different?
No, I think that there's a little bit more certainty in his personality now that wasn't there. You know, am I really an NHL goaltender when he first got wide-eyed kid from Lamont? I mean, getting this opportunity, this is great. You know, I don't know how long it's going to last. Is it rest of the season? Is it a short stint? You know, he wanted to sign with the Blackhawks organization. Now when, you know, he gets in a position where he is the established backup goaltender, there's a different mindset that you have to have. As a guy playing in and out of the lineup or a goaltender as a backup guy, knowing that I'm only going to start a certain amount of games, if something goes really wrong, I could get tossed in. And, you know, relief pitcher coming in baseball, you have to have a little bit of a different mentality. He's worked his way into a real comfortable area in his mind, I think, of where he is right now. So the only thing that I see, and he continues to work hard. He works extremely hard on the techniques of his game, and that's one thing that he's really focused on, and that's what all goaltenders are now. If you're feeling that you're at your top of the game and you're as good as you're going to get, you're going to start going downwards. And so he's worked extremely hard, but I think that the mindset that he has now is what separates him from where he was a couple years ago to where he is now.
Well, I can understand some.
you're going through where he.
I just pulled up his bio here, like, because, you know, Darling can have some post-traumatic stress from coming all the way up. I mean, you're talking about the North Iowa Outlaws, the Capital District Selects, the Indiana Ice, then the University of Maine. You think he's through? No, he's not. Louisiana Ice Skaters, Mississippi River Kings, Florida Everblades, Wichita Thunder, the Wheeling Nailers. I'd change that name if I was Wheeling. Hamilton Bulldogs, Milwaukee Admirals, Cincinnati Cyclones, Rockford Ice Dogs, and then to the Hawks. I mean, that's an unbelievable trek. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, my God, I'm on the ice at the United Center to actually feel like you belong.
And you got to understand that there was a point in there where things were not good. In his life.
Right, exactly.
And
there's a reason why
there's a lot of reasons why he was playing in a lot of these places, just trying to hang around. You know, I wanted to, you know, where am I going? What am I doing? Okay, I'm going to go here. I'm going to go there. That's all over. You know, his focus, his ability to turn his life around is something that, you know, you model yourself after. His ability to pick himself off the mat and change his life and put himself in a position where he's going to be rewarded for you know, his play and his character. And I think it's tremendous for Scott to be in this position. The Blackhawks are very fortunate to have the 1-2 punch. If you look around the NHL, even in Boston, the backup goaltenders in Boston behind Tuukka Rask have one win this season. So that puts all kinds of pressure on your starting goaltender. Corey's the number one guy, but when he needs an opportunity to take a break, you know that Scott Darling is going to come in and give you that opportunity to win.
He's Troy Murray, Jared Payton, Brent Sopel, and Mark Carman. What's your favorite memory about this guy here, Troy? Little Stanley Cup champion 2010.
He's not a very smart man. And I'll throw it out there, because his willingness to stand in front of a Shea Weber slap shot when it's about 25 feet away and not even flinch and not even think twice about it, there's no brains in this.
There
guy.
Is no. JP and I are talking about there's some screws loose there. So if we rattle our heads too long, you know, we're going to muffle all the sound.
But you know what? You set the model for the guys who are with the team right now. Nicholas Jalmerson, I think, learned a lot. Mm-hmm. Watching you play, and now he's that guy. I mean, I just marvel, because the game's changed. Back when you started, the game's changed. They switched the offensive zone. They've made it bigger. It's a shot-blocking league because you can't cover the points anymore. So everybody gets the puck back to the point. You've got a line of guys standing in front with the traffic in front of the net, and that's the only way you can score from the point. But when you have some of these guys with the new equipment that you use, equate, if you're a sports fan and you're a golfer, equate the new drivers to what the new hockey sticks are like compared to what it was back and when I started, all wood sticks. It's not even close.
Wow.
And these pucks come off there 100 plus miles an hour, and trust me, if you've ever been hit by a puck, it hurts. And I know Soaps, I mean, he's got some great stories, because, you know, back in the day when Ben Wilson was a defenseman for the Blackhawks, he had a power play stick, he had a regular five-on-five stick, and he had a penalty-killing stick. His penalty-killing stick was wrapped in fiberglass tape, which you couldn't break, you couldn't cut it, you couldn't do anything. And he used that in front of the net to cross-check so his stick wouldn't break. Soaps would have different pairs of gloves that he would use on the penalty killer, and he'd have to go over to the bench and switch gloves because there was extra padding on the ones that he used on the penalty kill. I don't know if I'm throwing a secret out there.
I sent those to the Hall of Fame, but yeah, you know, because I did break my hand so many times, I had special gloves. It's funny you said that, though, Troy. I end up filling my stick with foam during the playoffs. So, you know, I wouldn't break my stick.
So they wouldn't break it if you blocked a shot.
Yeah, you know, because obviously, you see, things are made to break now. And you see how many times, you know, parents lining up for a great one-timer and the stick snaps. You know, the companies make it that way. So I did everything I possibly could so it wouldn't break. So, we're playing against Philadelphia in the final, and I wouldn't get caught in a bad situation.
Before they got to the composite sticks, it went from wood to aluminum, and you couldn't break the aluminum. It was a weapon that you had out there, because they would bend before they would break.
Wow.
And they had to get away from that because they actually became too dangerous, and then they went to the composite stick, which is a lot lighter. And when we first started, even when you had the two-piece sticks after just the full wooden sticks, you could get a dozen sticks, and there might be two sticks that you could actually use in a game. The other ones were too heavy. There was warps in them, and you know, if you got a bad batch from the wrong tree, you know, you couldn't even use them. The curve was going the wrong way half the time. So, you know, these sticks are they're patterned. They're made. Each and every stick that comes in there is perfected to the individual player, and it's a completely different game with these sticks.
We were talking seriously earlier about what he had to do to have the long career that he had. I mean, basically, you know, that was his method to survive here for Brent, right? I mean, you got to have a lot of respect for just to stay in the league and to be able to contribute.
Every person in any sport comes into, you know, the top league, and to get there, they're great. They're great, whether it's collegiate, whether you're playing in hockey, whether it's the juniors, whatever it is. You get to the pro ranks, you are great. But you may not be that player that you were getting into the NHL, playing in the NHL. You have to find a niche. You've got first-round draft picks that don't have first-round skill ability. You've got to find a way to perform. You know, for me, I realized, you know, in the mid-80s, when I was in the mid-20s in my career, that I'm going to be a good face-off guy. I'm going to kill penalties, and that's kind of where my niche is going to be. I'm not going to be the Dennis Savard of the offensive. I had some good offensive years, but to last as long as I did, you have to find where you fit. And a lot of players don't, in all sports, figure that out. And if you don't make that transition, you know, he comes in here and he's going to be a shutdown defenseman. He's not going to score a lot of goals, but the role that he played was a big part of a championship team. You need those guys.
So think about this then. Let's talk about the guys that set themselves above everybody else. A guy like Patrick Kane, to have the season that he had last year, people look at his numbers now. Some people would kill to have the numbers that he has right now, but the bar is set so high. He set it up so high. Those guys, they have to do so much more to keep themselves to elevate so people aren't catching up to him. Just imagine, talk about how hard it is for a guy to be able to elevate his game even more after having an MVP season.
the tendencies of the top players are that they have to try something different. If you're a pitcher and you come in and you dominate in your first year, well, you look at the tapes, you figure out what the guy's throwing, how to hit it, you know, where it's going, where his strengths are. You know, if the one thing about Patrick Kane, he's made major adjustments in the way that he's played the game to get to where he is right now. One thing that he's worked on extremely hard was his ability to score from a further range out there. When he came into the NHL, he wasn't very strong. For him to score goals, he had to be inside of the faceoff dots offensively. He realized that that's tough for him for his size, and a lot of times when he gets the puck on the outside, so he worked on his shot. Now he can score from, you know, the top of the faceoff circles in. He's made differences. If you look at, and when I played against Wayne Gretzky's, there was a coach named Roger Nielsen. He broke down the tendencies of Wayne Gretzky. When he comes down the left wing side, this is what he does. This is what he does when he comes down the right wing side. You have to, as good players, make adjustments, and that's what Patrick Kane has done, and his ability each and every year to throw something else into his repertoire. To, like, you know what, I got this guy, and I'm going, no, you don't, because he did that last year, but he's not doing it this year. He has to elevate himself. Last year was just one of those years that, you know, he was so focused, he was so consistent in what he did. I don't know if he's going to get back to that level, just tough in today's game, because there's so much focus on a guy as good as him. That's where every team's shutdown guy head-to-head or top defenseman is playing up against Patrick Kane. And for these, you know, players, especially for the size of Patrick Kane, who's a lot stronger than a lot of people think. If you watch him, the way that he protects the puck, he's very, very strong with the puck and tough to hit. He makes adjustments to teams that are now adjusting to the way that he plays.
And, you know, watching him, obviously playing with him, you know, I see those tendencies. But he's a player that now has all of those attributes that you just talked about. But even if he doesn't have the puck, and that's why playing with Anisimov and Panarin has been so key, that he's got every element now. Even if he doesn't have that puck, he's making everybody around him so much better.
If you look in the one, you know, and he will kind of admit this, when you talk about Zetterberg and Datsyuk in all the head-to-head matchups you had with Detroit, you realize, because those two guys are about the same size and stature as Patrick Kane, they're a 200-foot type of player. Datsyuk and Zetterberg, maybe the best all-around players. I loved watching Datsyuk play, because if he didn't have the puck, he wanted it back. And Patrick Kane has learned over the years that the harder he works to get the puck back, the better he is when he gets the puck. And that wasn't something that he did. He kind of waited for a lot of things to happen, but that was another transition for him to be a better player, to work harder away from the puck. And there's so much focus, as Brent was saying, for him on the ice, that everybody said, well, we want to take away Patrick Kane. Well, that opens up Panarin. That opens up Anisimov. I mean, it's so tough. I mean, if you have that support group of guys around Patrick Kane, they're going to be great.
Tatar, Nyquist, Sharpie, who do you want, Troy?
Come on.
I'm winner,
chicken dinner.
I don't make those decisions.
You can't ask him that question.
I'm not the GM.
He just did.
I'm just the radio guy.
I can ask the question. Troy doesn't have to answer it. He is a professional, and I know he's...
There is, you know, names being... And I know that Nyquist and Tatar are names that have just come up here recently. Patrick Sharp's contract is up after this season. You know, Stan, I tell you what, has done a phenomenal job. And the people within the organization who look at where the salary cap problems are and what is available out there, you just don't think there's any ability for the Blackhawks to make trades. Trust me, they analyze exactly where they are. They look at the salary cap situation, and they know exactly where they stand. At the trade deadline, they know exactly what the weaknesses are of this team, and Stan will do whatever he can do to put this team in the best position to succeed. And I don't know who those players will be.
You're the best, Moz. Appreciate you, Troy Murray. Thanks for coming by. Right. Troy, of course, on the broadcast side starting at 6 o'clock. Troy Murray!
Thank you very much.
My man. All right, quick timeout. And Jeremy Rona coming up at 5 o'clock, 720 WGN.